And the scripture will pick up in verse 16 of Acts chapter 16. Well, let me unmute myself. Hey, I think maybe you can hear me now. Today's lesson, we're going to start in Acts chapter 16 and invite you to pick up a reading with me in Acts chapter 16. It says, "Now it happened as we went to prayer that a certain slave girl possessed with the spirit of divination met us, who brought her masters much profit by fortune-telling. This girl followed Paul and us and cried out, saying, 'These men are the servants of the Most High God who proclaim to us the way of salvation.' And this she did for many days. But Paul, greatly annoyed, turned and said to the Spirit, 'I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her.' And he came out that very hour. But when her masters saw that their hope of profit was gone, they seized Paul and Silas, dragged them into the marketplace to the authorities, and they brought them to the magistrates and said, 'These men, being Jews, exceedingly trouble our city. And they teach customs which are not lawful for us, being Romans, to receive or observe.' Then the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates tore off their clothes and commanded them to be beaten with rods. And when they had laid many stripes on them, they threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to keep them securely. Having received such a charge, he put them into prison, the inner prison, and fastened their feet in the stocks. But at midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened, and everyone's chains were loosed. And the keeper of the prison, awaking from sleep and seeing the prison doors open, supposing the prisoners had fled, drew his sword and was about to kill himself. But Paul called with a loud voice, saying, 'Do yourself no harm, for we are all here.'" I'll stop the reading there. We're actually not going to delve into this text until the very end of the lesson. It's an amazing story. And there's a great point that I want you to take from this last verse that we read. But as we gather together today virtually, I again am just glad for this opportunity that we have help enough and the means enough to get together in whatever way this is and to try to offer some imperfect worship to God. I know with all the technological challenges, there's always two or three things that go wrong, but I appreciate your patience and bearing with us as we try to do this the best we know how. And I pray that God is merciful to our imperfect worship at this time, and he sees our hearts and knows that we're only trying to please and to serve him. I'll say as well, as we get started this morning, that I'm as over this COVID-19 stuff as you are. I don't relish talking about it. I don't like watching the news to hear about it. I'm not obsessed with it. But what I am obsessed with is you and the challenges that these types of situations present for us. I mean, not the least of which are the financial difficulties that I know many are going through. And, you know, look, if we're all broke, we're still going to go to heaven, and that's something to be excited about. But at the same time, I remember Peter telling Paul in one of their early discussions to just remember the poor. And while spiritual things are the most important, poverty has a real impact on people's lives and ability to provide for their family and things. And so I'm mindful of people that are going through financial difficulties. I'm mindful of people's health. And by all means, your spiritual health is 100 times more important than your physical health. But as we've talked about in the past, Jesus had compassion on people and healed their diseases. And God listens to the prayer of a righteous man, fervently offering a prayer for the sick. God cares about your physical health. And so I'm mindful and careful to make sure I'm not infecting you and getting you sick. But most importantly, I care about the spiritual realities that we're in. These challenges provide really a test of our faith in a number of areas. And if we're not careful, these challenges can cause us to offend God and sin or question our relationship with God and a host of other things. And so the reason I talk about anything related to the coronavirus or whatever is just because I care about your spiritual strength. I want you to feel comfortable in your relationship to God, and we feel comfortable in our relationship to God by doing the things that please God and walking in Christ and walking worthy of our calling. And I want you to do that and know that you're obeying God even in these difficult times. And so I want to talk to you about something this week that I think many Christians can find themselves getting into, as it's very easy to get into and very prevalent in our society. So I'll put some pictures up here on the screen. This is the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, and he's had a rough week. And many of you know, I mean, he's attempted to open up the country, I say the country, our state, and get some Georgia businesses back to normal. He felt like that was the right thing to do. And of course, his opponent from the last election, Stacey Abrams, had some tweets and other things to say, basically saying that, you know, his decisions make no sense. And of course, if you're Brian Kemp, I'm sure you look at that and think, well, that's very nice of her. But then you get your own president, who you have a good relationship with and who has supported you, tweeting, saying, look, I never gave him the okay on these few businesses. They're kind of outside the guidelines. All these, I want to take a little slower path than what Kemp is doing. And so here you've got the president kind of undermining what you're doing as a governor here for Georgia. And you got people commenting. I mean, you can barely read any article without reading comments like this. I'm so disappointed in Kemp right now. I've done everything in my power to stay home and keep safe. And they go on to say, I did it for myself. I don't want to get people sick. And then somebody comments on that. I've never been not disappointed in Kemp. I'm certainly not super surprised being the, I think it says weasel. I got my video over it. Yeah, being the weasel that he is. Isn't that nice? And then the last one I'll put up here, which is even nicer. Kemp needs to go bowling ASAP. I think implying that they hope he catches a deadly disease. This is not uncommon behavior for people in our country or political landscape. Every decision is questioned and most likely maligned, even if no one really knows the best course of action. And I'll tell you, things like this are decidedly unchristian. And I want to just share with you the topic of our lesson this morning. I've titled Respecting Our Leaders, because in these times of uncertainty and difficulty, now more than ever, people are questioning and second-guessing and wondering, what should I be doing as a person? And if we don't agree with the decisions that our leaders are making, well, we're pretty vocal about it. And we don't care who hears. And we'll take to the public airwaves, social media, and other things and let our feelings be known. But God has given us pretty specific instructions about how to handle our role as citizens in a local government. And so I want to talk to you about this morning, not because I care about Kemp any more than I care about Stacey Abrams, any more than I care about anybody else. I care about you. And I want you doing the right things in these difficult times and learning what we can do to respect our leaders. And so the goal of the lesson this morning is this. We'll go over a couple things that God lays down as groundwork as to how our relationship with the government should look. And then once we do that, we'll reflect on the reasons God gives us these directions. God's commandments are always for our benefit, and God's got a reason of why he wants us to do what he asks us to do. And then finally, we'll make some application, and by the end of it, hope to apply some of these things so that as the weeks go by, we don't turn into the rest of the world and look like our non-Christian friends in the way our mouths work and the things that we say about our government. One more thing as we get started, I do have my family here at the building with me, so if you hear screaming children, I just wanted it to feel like old times. And so I miss the noise and the amount of screaming. My kids can do a good impression of the rest of you, so if you do hear something, that is indeed me. All right, the first thing I want us to do as we jump into the lesson is to think about a Christian's role as Wayne read for us in Romans chapter 13. I've got it here on the board, and that's this. A Christian's role is to be subject to our leaders and be subject to our local government. He says in Romans 13 and verse 1, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there's no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. I'll tell you at the outset, I mean, that's pretty disappointing if you're a first century Christian. I say disappointing because if you were a first century Christian, you were getting abused from pretty much every angle it was possible. A lot of early Christians were Jews, and as a Jewish Christian, you were especially feeling the heat from other Jewish people who didn't believe Jesus was the Messiah. And whether that was the abuses like Paul went through that we read, saying these guys are causing problems in our town, the Jews were antagonistic to first century Christians that could end up in prison or jail. And then you have, outside of the Jewish leadership that might hold some sway in Jewish territories, I mean, you have the Roman government that in the first century, I mean, you know from past studies, they weren't friendly toward Christians and could abuse and use Christians as a means to an end. And if they find favor in abusing Christians, kind of like Pilate did in Jesus, they'll use whatever for their own political gain. And so Christians being abused in the first century is not a surprise to any of you. And so if you're looking for some help from God and Jesus, you would want them to say, all right, here's what we're going to do. The most ungodly person in the world is the Roman emperor, and I want everybody to band together, and we're going to overthrow him. And yet, that's not what he says. Here he tells Christians in the first century, I've got something for you to do, and I want you to be subject to the governing authorities. That idea of being subject to someone is to willingly put yourself under their leadership. To put oneself under. You might remember that Greek word being talked about in relation to submission. And it's translated subject here, and it's not a word we use a lot. You don't wake up and tell your children, I want y'all to be subject to me today. We don't generally use that word. But we do use the word submit or yield or submission. And that's that idea of yielding yourself, of putting yourself willingly up under someone. If you're at a crossroads and you've got a yield sign and there's a bunch of cars coming, you willingly wait for them to have the right of way. And then once they've done their thing, then you pull out into the street. And that's that idea of this Greek word here, to put oneself under. And that's something that we do willingly. And it's a common thing. I mean, you think about it in a number of passages in the New Testament. Jesus, if you remember in Luke chapter 2 and verse 51, it talks about, remember, this is just a weird story of where he's in Jerusalem as a young man in the temple, and his parents can't find him. They go back and find him. And after they find him, it said that he went back and was subject to them in all things. And so that idea of Jesus being submissive to his parents, that's that same word here, how Jesus was toward his family, and you could imagine Jesus being like the model child. That's the relationship that we have to have to our government. James chapter 4, I mean, submit ourselves to God. That's that same word, the idea of us being submissive to God, and resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Submit to God, draw near to God. Submitting yourselves to God means willingly putting myself under the will of God. What does God want from me? I'll yield my will and my desires. I'm going to do whatever God wants. And we can appreciate that phrase. It's the same word used in marriage. Wives, be submissive to your husbands. The church should be to their elders. I mean, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, a related word, not the specific exact Greek word, but from the same root of putting yourself under. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 17, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give an account. Why do I bring up these examples? Well, think about how Jesus was to his parents. Think about how we're to be to God. Think about how the church is to submit to their elders. Then think about how we are to treat our local government. Which of those does not belong? And it's pretty easy to see that we don't feel the same, maybe, as we do about the others as we should. I mean, as far as Romans chapter 13 goes, when you read this, I mean, it is, to many of us, a very offensive verse. And we'll talk about why. It shouldn't be offensive. It's a very difficult verse because God asks us to do something that is hard for all of us. And I understand, submission's hard in any relationship. It is hard sometimes to submit to the decisions of the church. I mean, you would think, no, I mean, I know the elders are listening right now. But in general, right, you might say, I don't understand that. But yet a good Christian willingly submits themselves to it. It's the same way to God. You might not understand why God asks you to do what God asks you to do, but you submit yourselves to it. And you might not understand why God would want you to be subject to those that are in power. But I assure you, right here at the outset, you can take this to the bank, write it down, tattoo it on your arm. This is a faithful saying, let every person be subject to the governing authorities. Our role as Christians in the political landscape is to subject ourselves to whoever is in power. Now, for many of us, that might be easy. Right now, during this term, or you may love our president, you may love your governor, you may love whoever the local mayor is, and they've made good decisions for your town, and submission's easy. But let me tell you, in 4 years, it might not be easy. In 10 years, it might not be easy. And so you're going to have to reflect on these verses and decide, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to submit myself to the government because God has asked me to do it. First thing, your role in this thing is to be subject. And secondly, I want to turn your attention to Titus chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. I got them on the board here, so it's easy for you to read. Paul tells Titus to remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to avoid quarreling, to be gentle, and to show perfect courtesy toward all people. So here in a related passage, and I'll just share with you, this is throughout the New Testament. This is not, oh, it's Romans 13 and it's nothing else. Whether it's Peter or Paul talking to Titus or Paul talking to the Romans, this theme of being submissive to those that are in leadership positions in the world is just a part of the New Testament. And here he tells Titus, I want you to be submissive to rulers and authorities. But he gives us a little bit additional direction here in verse 2, to speak evil of no one. So not only are we to be obedient and to be submissive, but he wants us to guard what we say and how we say it. I'll give you an example of how this plays out. In Acts chapter 23, and I thought about just going through the entire book of Acts, as really it's almost a tale of how Christians interact with government. Whether it's Peter and John and Paul, you know, they're going to speak out regardless of what the government asks them to do. It's better to obey God rather than men. And yet there are other times when submission and deference is called for, and we can almost follow the trail of Paul's interaction with local governments and appreciate how he handled rightly what God wanted for him. Here's an example. In Acts 23, and of course you know, like reading in Acts 16, Paul gets abused by people through really no fault of his own. He's not going around doing wrong or stirring up trouble, but trouble is following him. And the high priest is interacting with Paul here in this negative way, and Paul has some very harsh words to him to say in verse 3. And those who stood by said, would you revile God's high priest? And Paul said, I did not know, brothers, that he was the high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. That idea of checking what he said, because he's reminded of what God asked him, not to speak evil of a ruler of your people, that's very difficult to do, especially when you're arrested and struck and hit for no fault of your own. And then you have something to say, hey, do you strike me contrary to the law? And then you find out that the person doing this is in a leadership position. And Paul's instant response is, I'm going to be careful here. I apologize. I didn't know, brothers, or because God told me not to speak evil of a ruler of your people. I want to turn over, if you got your Bibles, to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 23. And think about how this aspect of our interaction with the rest of the world is so important. And speaking of Jesus, he tells us that Christ in verse 21 suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. who, and notice verse 23, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. I mean, when you're reviled, I mean, the easiest thing to do is just to revile in return. The idea of revile, I mean, when someone is speaking evil towards you, when they're yelling at you, what happens? Something triggers in our mind that says, hey, I'm going to yell back. And that's not the way Jesus handled himself when he was here on the earth. When he was reviled, like a sheep before its shears is silent, so Jesus opened not his mouth. And that mentality of respect for our leaders is seen not only in Paul, but in Jesus, and it needs to be seen in us. Rather than tear people down, Christians should be verbally respecting the office of leaders. So, I mean, at its most basic request, when something happens in the government that I don't agree with, I don't go and say, hey, I got my First Amendment rights, and so I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm going to tell you that I think you're totally wrong. That's what most of us do. I mean, if you look on social media, people are constantly saying what they think and what they disagree with and how wrong something is to where it's just commonplace. I mean, our conversation is me trying to foist my opinion on someone and me trying to dominate the conversation by what I think. And I feel like, especially for Christians, this can come from a good place. Christians are champions for justice and righteousness, and we should be. We want to see good done. And when we see evil being done at a global level and a leadership level, it's very easy for my initial reaction to be, hey, you're wrong. And here's why you're wrong. But we have to understand that our being submissive, even to an evil government, that our respecting and saying good things and verbalizing and thinking good things, we've talked about this in the past, is not abdicating my responsibility to stand for truth and justice and righteousness. Our silence, as I have up here my second point, it doesn't excuse a government. Or it doesn't forgive the evils that someone has done or their missteps. Here's what you got to appreciate as a Christian. God's going to right every wrong. God's going to correct the proud. God's going to bring them down. And righteousness exalts a nation. And except the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain that build it. And to that end, God will destroy a nation if it needs destroyed. God will tear down a leader if he needs torn down. God is going to do all those things in God's time. But my goal in life is not to right every possible wrong or let everybody know, hey, here's something that I disagree with. My goal is submission, and part of that comes in the way I verbally communicate and say things. And we'll talk more about how to apply that here in just a couple minutes. But I'll leave you with this on this slide. Words come from our heart. And I think the scriptures bear all that out. I mean, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. And you know, things that proceed from inside a man, those kind of thoughts and murders and adulteries, those things, that defiles a person. And so if we're quick to say something negative about someone and their decision, that says a lot about what we think. It says a lot about that I don't appreciate that I'm not elevated into a position of power, that I'm not comfortable being submissive to someone when they're wrong, that I'm going to be right and I'm going to let you know it. And it lets you know that I really feel like I'm smarter and better than you. And that response to a Christian, again, think about it, armed with truth and righteousness, shouldn't God have said Christians should have the freedom to say whatever, whenever? But that's not the way it is. Sometimes the position someone is in dictates our respect and honor regardless of what they're doing. That's true for children, being obedient to their parents. That's true for everything else. Like, I don't have to agree with you to show you respect and honor that your position deserves. And so for a Christian's standpoint, are you speaking evil of the things that are being done today? Do you have a trail of comments that you've left on the internet about your displeasure about things? If so, where is that coming from? Third, I wanted to share with you, God doesn't just blindly tell us to do this. God's given us a lot of reasons why he wants these things to happen. And I appreciate that about God. God has not hidden his motives and his thoughts about many things from you and I. God's relationship with us has been one of revelation. God has communicated from the beginning until the end what he's done, what he's doing, and what he will do. And I appreciate that God didn't just leave us a list of rules to follow with no understanding, even though he had that right as the creator. But God's given us some explanations as to why he would have us have this attitude with our leadership. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13, I've got it here on the slide. He says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people." God gives us a lot of reasons why he wants us to obey. And if you want to go back and look at Romans chapter 13, I just want to touch on a few of these here in a minute. As most of the time, I mean, verse 1 is where it's at, be subject to the governing authorities. But he goes on to explain, for there's no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. We'll comment on that in a second. The first point I want to make up, is from the Bible. The first one I want to note here is that authority is from God. Authority is from God. There is no authority except from God. Do you know where the concept of government came from? It came from God. The same way that God created the institution of marriage, the family, and the order of headship in the family, and how that should operate, God has set up the order of society, and that there should be leadership, and that people should obey that leadership, and it's for our good. And based on that authority and leadership, no matter what is happening, we need to respect the office of authority. I've got up here 1 Samuel 24 and verse 6. You remember the relationship between David and Saul? And how would you describe that relationship? Was it great? No, it was horrible. Well, it was horrible from Saul's perspective. David did everything he could to take care of Saul and Saul's son Jonathan. And yet Saul did at every turn what he could do to undermine and ultimately kill David. But David had been given an opportunity to strike back at Saul in a moment of weakness. And yet David looked at this opportunity. Here he could take the life of his enemy, claim the throne he had been anointed for. And yet faced with that moment, you know what David said? "I can't lift my hand against the Lord's anointed." David showed a great amount of respect from authority, not because of who Saul was, but because of who put him there. He didn't say, "I can't lift my hand against Saul. I can't lift my hand against the king. I can't lift my hand against someone that God wanted to be there." Brethren, if you take nothing else from today, take this. God puts in power those he will. And those who are in power are there by God's design and decree. And if God wants to change it, God will change it in his time. But sometimes we see it as an opportunity to fight against an evil person. And what we're really doing is fighting against God's will. That's what David said. David said, "I'm not going to lift my hand against the Lord's anointed." And what happened to Saul? Eventually, in God's time, Saul was killed. David ascended the throne. And all was right in God's time and in God's way. And so we need to be very conscious that when we see leaders, we don't just see a person, but we see the divine ordinance behind that person and the respect that it is due. Secondly, as we've read in 1 Peter 2, a reason why we're to be submissive to the government is because submission gives our opponents nothing bad to say about us. I mean, how many of us, if your whole life was out there on social media, could someone look back through that and say, "Oh man, this Look, 2013, you really lost it, man. You were not being who you need to be. And that's what we do, right? When we're going to tear someone down, we go through their archives of things you said, of a video that you put on YouTube, or some kind of interview that you had, and we say, look at you, 14 years ago, you said something really horrible, and now you're an unfit person. Brethren, God's been warning us against that for a long time, long before there was an internet. God has been telling us, look, you be submissive and respectful so that any time someone thinks to malign you because of who you are and as a Christian, they can't do it. They won't be able to do it. Titus chapter 2 and verse 8, if you want to flip over there, he's telling Titus the same thing. He said, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Look, this is your goal as a Christian, not to say or do something that someone can then turn around and use against you. It's like an elder asked to be above reproach. Our lives are to be such that you can't have people saying, well, you sure seem like an angry, bitter person. Well, only in politics. That's not how a Christian should be. We should be free. Our character should be free from these things. And when we're submissive and not speaking evil about the government, then we give our opponents nothing bad to say about us. Thirdly, God gives us another reason in Romans chapter 13 of why he would have us submit to the government. And this is ultimately the reason. Because government and order and law is for our benefit. In Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, he says it's God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he's God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Now think about this for a minute. What happens on a football team when there's anarchy and chaos and dissension in the locker room? Well, many of you know enough about football to know that when players are going at each other, when they're undermining the coach, when they're not all on the same page, then there are problems. It translates to the field. But where there's leadership, where there's good chemistry between the coaches and those who are subservient to them, those who are the players, there's order, and when there's order, there's success. Same way, God calls us to this idea of order for our benefit. Why does God set up authority? Because we don't want chaos. God's not the author of confusion. God wants peace and order here. And if the governor of our state is trying to do something, and everybody else is trying to undermine that, what do you have? You have hatred and bitterness and anarchy and chaos. And that's what a lot of our country is right now. Half the people hating one person, half the people hating another, half trying to undermine the other half of Congress. How does that work out for us? It doesn't. We reap what we sow. And if we would respect our leaders, and they would respect each other and those who are above them, then things would end up a lot better than they are right now. And fourth, I want to leave you with this from this slide. Before we move on to our application. In Romans chapter 13 and verse 7, he says to render therefore to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. Christians pay what they owe. It should be a hallmark of a Christian, right? If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I take out a loan for something, I'm going to pay it. If I borrow money, I'm going to pay it back like I told you I would. We're people of integrity, and we pay what's owed. And it's not just a payment from a financial thing. Yes, I'm going to pay my taxes. He encourages us to do that, tells us to do that. But there's another kind of payment here that he mentions. That's the payment of honor. Pay honor to whom honor is due? Well, we might not think people are due honor, but here in the context of the authority of the government, they're due it by virtue of the state that they hold, the office that they're in. They are due honor because of the title and the respect that they should be given. And so I want you to feel it as something that you owe them. It's not just a command for you to do, but they are owed honor and respect. And as Christians, we need to be about paying than what we're owed. All right, last slide. This is not. You got two slides. But it's the last one with a bunch of bullets. All right. Respecting our leaders. What I want you to take away from this then this morning. Here are my reasons and thoughts as to why it's just very practical and helpful for us to respect our leaders and how we can apply this today. Number one, we need to respect our leaders because you really don't know the best course of action. I mean, this is amazing to me in this age of a coronavirus. People, the population, can speak so confidently about what's going to happen if we do this. It just blows my mind. You know, if we knew that if you opened up hair salons and bowling alleys and tattoo parlors and all these things, that X amount of people would die, it would be very easy to make a decision. But people don't know what's going to happen. And so you have some people that are saying, well, I'm just going to stay in my home for the rest of the year until I get a vaccine. And you have other people that are saying, hey, I'm ready to get out and live my life. But the reality is, neither of those parties knows the best course of action. You can't know the future. And so in a situation, in a case where we just don't know a clear-cut decision and the outcome, can we not have a measure of respect for people that are operating in the realms of judgment? I think this has a great spiritual bearing, too, as our elders and our leaders of our church try to make the best decisions they can for when it's safe for us to meet. Now, think about it this way. All right, you're a 21-year-old, and you're sitting at home, and you like a girl at the church building. And you think, well, this isn't working out. Why can't we get together and meet? And you might not think that it's a big deal. And you might question, well, why are people dragging their feet on these things? Well, it might be fine and dandy for you, young and healthy and vibrant. But they're trying to take into account other people that may not be so healthy and what the impacts would be for them. And so you might feel 100% comfortable with the church coming up here and meeting next week. I don't know why we're not getting together. But let me assure you, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to get sick. You don't know who would be well. It might be fine. It might not be fine. And given that, no one knows the best course of action 90% of the time because you're not infallible and you can't see the future. Can we not show respect to those who are over us, leading us the best way that they know how? And sure, share your opinion, share your thoughts, but submit yourselves under them and yield to them because you don't know the best course of action. Secondly, we should respect our leaders because Jesus did. I mean, if there was ever a person that could have, and you might think should have, blown up Pilate, blown up the Sanhedrin, blown up most of the people that he interacted with, I mean, Jesus could have done it. Why would he submit himself to paying a tax? Why would he show honor and respect to people like anyone? Why would Jesus do that? Jesus left us an example to follow in his steps. And you go read the story of the crucifixion, and you see what submission looks like. Abused verbally, abused physically, and he took it. He took it because he, in doing good, entrusted himself to a faithful Creator. I mean, he was going to submit himself to God, and God was going to exalt him above every name. And that's what happens with us. When we submit ourselves, we're following the same path of Jesus. We're not exonerating or making everyone, we're not ignoring problems. What we're doing is trusting in God, that God will exalt us in due time. And so, if you're wondering why you should show respect to your leaders, Jesus did. Jesus was someone that we should act like. All right, third, and we got one more point. We should respect our leaders because we would want the same done to us. Now, I know for many of us, if you're not one of the five elders here at the church, you won't know what it's like to be in that position of leadership, to be an elder in the church. And I'm going to tell you, just from my experience in interacting with elders and churches, it's not the most fun thing you could do. Now, it's rewarding. It's a blessing to care for people that you love deeply and going to have an eternal relationship with. But it's not always fun. It's not always easy. If you were an elder, and Lord willing, many of you will be, would you want the same kind of respect given to you? Maybe you won't know the best course of action. Maybe you won't know the right thing to say. Maybe you won't know the best thing to do in a certain situation. Would you not want the same respect given to you? I think you would. And so God calls us to treat others the way we'd like to be treated. And if you would want respect given to you in a leadership position, why don't you start giving that now? Let me tell you that the same is true for parents. Kids, how many times have you been told, just wait till you grow up. I hope your kids treat you the same way you treat me. Well, maybe you don't say that too much in your home. But, you know, you feel like as a child, you don't appreciate that one day you're going to be a parent, trying to keep your children alive and healthy and safe and raised on the right track. And so just appreciate that one day you may have children listening to you. And you want to show the same respect to a parent that you would want a child to give to you. All right. Fourth, and then we'll close with our verses that we started with. I think it's just very important for us to appreciate that we need to respect our leaders, because the grace that we give others and the way that we judge others and the way that we treat others will be measured back to us. Jesus warns us about judging in Matthew chapter 7. And that same way that I measure others, it's going to be measured back to me. And I want the full measure of God's kindness and mercy. And because I want that, I need that. I need the grace of God every day. Because I need that, we should be quick to give that grace to others. And that includes our leaders of our country. Might not be deserved. They may sin against us 70 times 7. But I want to show respect and kindness and forgiveness, because I'm going to need kindness and forgiveness somewhere down the road. All right, I want to leave you with our verses that we started with in Acts chapter 16. And you may say, Why would we read these verses? I want you to think about this situation, and I'll leave this with you. Paul is in prison, and he's in prison unjustly. You read the verses with me as we started. He just cast a demon out of somebody, which would be helpful, but it had a negative impact on somebody else's profit. And so in doing so, well, it made some people angry. Well, here he's in prison, and guess what happens? There's this divine earthquake where all of a sudden, guess what? Oh, it just happens to free the cells of every prisoner. Now, if you were Paul, what would you do? Let me tell you what I would do. I'm walking right out of there. This is great, right? I mean, what are the chances? Well, there's no chances with God. God is taking care of everything. And I shouldn't have been here in the first place. So I'm hopping out of here and I'm bolting for the door. And the jailer's thinking the same thing. Surely the prisoners are going to free themselves. And yet, just picture this for a moment. This man has drawn his sword and is about to kill himself, because if he lets his prisoners escape, his life is forfeit. And here is Paul standing there, crying out with a loud voice, saying, don't harm yourself. We're right here. We're right here. Paul respected the fact that someone put him into prison. And he wasn't about to leave. They put him here. Here I am. He appealed to Caesar all the way on up to the end of his life, set before and submitted to questionings from governors, Festus and Felix, on up to the highest courts of Rome. And Paul was respectful at every turn. And so whether it was a shipwreck where the prisoners aren't going to escape, or here in that jail, he was going to stand here and do the right thing. Hey, don't harm yourself. I know it's crazy, but we're still all just right here. We're not trying to escape. You want me in prison? This is where I'm going to be. And with that kind of mentality, whoop, my headset's saying it's time to go. With that kind of mentality, let me tell you what that'll do for the world. That'll cause people to say, like the Philippian jailer, who are you? And what can I do to be saved? You guys aren't from this world. You're different than everybody else. What can I do to be saved? Brethren, if you respect your leaders in this crisis, then maybe you'll have a similar influence on people, that they'll say, who are you that can handle this crisis with such respect and dignity? Brethren, that's what God's called us to do. And I just encourage you, if you haven't made your life right with God, do like that Philippian jailer did and say, what must I do to be saved? In the same hour of the night, we'll wash your stripes. We'll take care of you. We'll baptize you. We'll put you into Christ right now. You can call me, text me, whatever, show up at the building. We'll do whatever it needs to be done. And I just encourage you, as we close the service, make your life right with God. And eventually, God will exalt us all as he did his son. And I'm grateful to be a part of that family and an heir to that promise. Thanks for your time this morning, and I'll turn the services back over to the guys.